Welcome to the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast with me, Sherry Honeycutt, Life Coach, where I have one mission with this podcast, and that is to help you get out of your velvet rut, to stop living by default and waiting to have the life you crave. This is a podcast where I help you take inspired action, step into the responsibility for your own happiness, and start every day figuring out what you can do to create the life you want, because it won't accidentally happen, my friends. So lean into today's content, make the intention to take away a nugget or two, and more importantly, decide that you're going to implement whatever you take away from here today, because it's on you, baby. It's on you to create that life that you want, and I know you can do it. So let's go. Hey there, have I got a treat for you? I'm super excited that the next few episodes of the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast are a series of conversations that I had with amazing people several years back. In fact, most of them were recorded in the throes of the pandemic. But don't worry, they are full of gems of wisdom that really are evergreen, and I can't wait for you to hear them. So join me on a trip down memory lane over the next few episodes of my podcast, where you will benefit from these never before heard, too good to miss recordings that I've had stashed away. And trust me, they're packed with juicy insights that I hope you will enjoy as much as we enjoyed recording them. And remember, it's never too late to start designing your life on purpose. Oh my goodness, you guys, I'm so excited. I am going to introduce you here in a moment to Rachel Drunkenmiller. I have to tell you, I say this with a couple of folks that I've interviewed lately, but when I met Rachel, I immediately knew this was this bright, shiny star, this person that I just wanted to kind of connect with. If you've met those people who are just like magnetic, she must be covered in magnets, but that's how I feel about Rachel. Before I just start to go into all about you, hi, how are you?
Hi, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. We're going to have such a good conversation that anyone listening to is going to be, I think, transformed by. I'm going to be so bold as to say that.
Let's go for it. Let's just state it. We're going to have a transformative conversation. I already know it's going to be transformative for me. I sense you're going to feel the same thing for you. And of course, that's going to transfer over to the listeners. I'm just going to give you a thumbnail about Rachel, because all of the specifics, which she has a long, amazing vita of things that she's done, is going to be in the show notes. But Rachel has been a leader, a facilitator, a speaker, a change agent for folks in the workplace. And she has, you'll have to tell me, Rachel, when did you launch your own business? When did you do that?
September of 2019.
Yeah. So not that long ago. And she has, you guys, she has not stopped during the pandemic. I believe she's done 160. If I've read that correct, it's probably more than that now. 160.
At this point, probably almost 200. Yeah. Something like that.
Wow. I mean, this woman did not sit on her laurels while we were all going, you know, wringing our hands and going, what the hell are we supposed to do? Rachel's out here. I know what we're supposed to do. Talk to people online. She just said, okay. Yeah. So a little backstory. I met Rachel in a community that we're involved in and really have had the opportunity to share space with her, to hear her wisdom, to hear her sing, which I'm winking at her that she's going to sing for us at some point. And so, ladies and gentlemen, Rachel Drunkenmiller. Hi.
Hi. Here we are. Thank you for that. Yeah, it's been a wild and crazy year. I know we're going to talk about lots of things today.
We are. You know, I want to begin, you know, I think I told you before we turned the recording on, I said, you know, we're going to just let this organic conversation happen, but we're going to talk about how you have lived your life intentionally. Now, I haven't mentioned to the listeners, the name of your company is called Unmuted. And I know a little bit about this story, but I'd love for us to start here. Tell the listeners and tell me again, because I know I'll get some new little tidbits. Tell me about the birth of that idea, the Unmuted. Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, so I'm a journaler. I have journals that go back, like I have one from elementary school. It's a little like black book with pink hearts on it and pink and blue pages.
Oh, stop it. <That's>, stop it already.
I have a crush on Adam when I was in like fifth grade or something. Like, I mean, little things, and some things were more personal, like more deeply personal than that. But that's like the thing I have that goes furthest back. But then in the past, I'd say 6 years, I've pretty consistently journaled, and I have about, I don't know, 35 or something different journals, probably fill about five or so a year. And I just, it's just a place for me to really keep a history of my own thoughts and feelings and fears and worries and events in my life. And so anyway, growing up though, I was a very, I'd say unexpressed, muted, timid, guarded, scared version of who I am today.
Wow. Those are some powerful words. Can we just, I mean, I want to say those again, if I can, just unexpressed, timid, guarded, and scared. I just got this visual of this little tender little girl. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Proceed.
Tender's a really good way. No one's ever used that word before. Tender's a really good way to describe it. I think, you know, there was like a softness about me as a little girl that I feel like ended up getting covered up very quickly by this achiever, this hard-nosed achiever that just wanted to get ahead and compete and win. And so for me, I think a lot, like when I was really little, I was very introspective. You know, my parents were like, we leave you in your playpen for like 2 hours. You just amuse yourself. Like I was just, I enjoyed my own company from the time I was very little. But I didn't always feel like I fit in, and I went to Catholic school and I wasn't Catholic. And so I was naturally left out of certain things. And so instead of speaking up about that or sharing that my feelings were hurt or they wish I was included, I sort of just like kept it all inside and was just sad. But when you're a good little girl, you don't really demonstrate sadness or anger. You like society sort of tells you, oh, these emotions are not allowed. And so I didn't express those things when I felt hurt by somebody leaving me out of something, or my parents were going through a rough patch in their marriage when I was about 5 or 6 years old and separated for a period of time. And my younger brother and I were just, you know, sort of in the middle of that. And fortunately, they were able to come back together. They just celebrated 41 years of marriage earlier this month.
Beautiful.
You know, which is great. It's like I saw this redemptive piece, but I also was affected by the fact that there was a rupture.
No question.
And like, I handled it well, meaning like I didn't get in trouble and I didn't have any outbursts and I was, you know, emotionally regulated enough and I did well in school. And so no one really gets curious about that kid.
Right. I'm like, sorry, the giggle, but it's true, right? You're the good kid. You're like, we got other kids. The squeaky wheel. She's not a squeaky wheel. Yeah.
Right. You're fine. My brother was like the diffusing bomb in the corner. Gotcha. Like he internalized all of that very differently than I did.
Gotcha.
And he's well adjusted and has, you know, a family of his own and is very successful in real estate. And, you know, he's turned out fine. But, you know, I think a lot of us, we silence ourselves when we're going through hurt in our families. We silence our emotions. Sure. We silence our feelings. We don't express ourselves. We don't speak up. And so I just had a history of doing this in a lot of my relationships. And I also had a history of doing this in terms of my creative expressions. I loved writing. I would write stories and I would never share them with anyone. I'd write poems. I have a story I wrote called The Dare, and it says Rachel Bryant, which is my maiden name. Rachel Bryant, age 9. I have it in my basement. Like, I just, I loved reading. I loved books. I read all the Nancy Drew books. Like words were an escape for me.
Yeah.
Just not said from my own mouth.
Right.
Like,
but you were creating though in your head, right? Yes. You were being creative. You weren't just partaking of other people's words, but you were also being creative, but it was all inside. Okay.
Yes. I just wasn't sharing it. And I loved singing from the time, I mean, from as long as I can remember, I loved to sing. And there was a vulnerable part of that I just didn't really feel comfortable offering to other people. And so I would literally sit in the pews at church when I was in school, Catholic school. And if I thought the person in front of me could hear me singing, like if somebody, you can know, in church, if somebody turns around and gives you a side eye, you're like, oh, I'm being too loud.
Right.
Maybe they were turning because they thought I had a good voice, but I automatically, my interpretation was, oh my gosh, I'm being too loud and annoying.
Yeah.
So Sherry, as much as I love singing, I would lip sync.
That is so hard for me to believe. Yeah. I mean, you know, I believe you, but to who you are now, which makes who you are now so astonishing, where you've come from lip syncing
in church,
church. Yeah. But I will say I can relate and imagine listeners too, where we're sitting there and we are deciding what other people think and we're changing our behavior. With zero real acknowledgement of what's out there, we're taking in data, we think, and then altering ourselves.
Yes.
Does that does that describe what you were doing? You morphed.
Yes, it totally. I literally muted myself. Like, we mute these aspects of who we are, whether it's for whoever's, maybe it's painting, or maybe it's poetry, or maybe it's singing, or maybe it's theater, or maybe it's dance, or maybe it's painting. I don't know. Like, I think everyone has a desire. I think we are naturally, like in Big Magic, Elizabeth Gilbert's book, right? Like,
sure.
We're all creators, right? Like, we are born to create and to contribute and to add something to the world. And I just didn't let myself do that. I let myself do that in academics. And like, that was basically the only domain that I permitted myself to really show up fully.
So let me ask you a question. Yeah, you said all of a sudden there was this part of you, this achiever that parted to win, that wanted to win. So, which is a little different than, as you were just, not different, but slightly a different side of that timid, guarded, scared person. But you could shine, you sort of asserted yourself a little bit more in the achiever and winner part. Mm-hmm. So you weren't complete, you could shine there. Why, what was it about, what were you afraid of? Let's psychoanalyze you, Rachel. What were you?
Let's do it. I've spent hundreds of hours in therapy, so this will not be anything new.
So the Cliff Note version. What scared? Yeah.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, what I felt like academic achievement did is it gave me a very tangible bar to demonstrate my value.
Measurable, tangible, yeah.
Measurable. You got an A. Or like at work, you got a promotion. You got the next job, right? You got a raise. You got a title change. You got the opportunity to work on that project. You finished that project. You got an award. These are all very tangible things. And so focusing on the tangible distracted me from focusing on what was beneath the surface, which was like dealing with my own insecurities and anxieties and loneliness and sadness and the trauma. I mean, I never talked to anyone about what my parents' rupture in their relationship did to me. No one ever asked me how I was doing. Everyone just assumed I was fine. And it's really not been until my mid to late 30s that I've even opened up these conversations in therapy of like, wait a second, all that stuff affected me. like not to point the finger and blame my parents, but like there was a whole period of my life where like that just literally did not have a voice and was not heard. And internalized all of that and was like, well, if I am just good, this is a place I know I can get approval. This is a place I know I can be accepted. I don't feel socially accepted. So I will achieve my way into acceptance.
Yeah.
And it worked. Like it worked with teachers loved me. Like I excelled. It was almost like formulaic. Like I knew how to just own it in school.
Yeah.
And then
inside,
just,
though, you were inside, there was this wounded little bird.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. She was scared and the tough, I've got it all together. It doesn't show. I mean, those are like dichotomous ways of being. It's like, I didn't show that people just assume too, that someone who shows up that way, people assume that someone who's achieving is okay. Which is like, we'll talk about burnout in a little bit later
right.
And how that actually is not true. But you know, I think a lot of it was just that I felt almost like safe in the space of achievement because I knew where I stood. I knew how to get there. I knew how to work the system. But pretty much every other area of my life, I struggled with feeling competent or confident. So I just channeled all of it into school.
Right. So socially, maybe. Okay. So what other areas?
Artistically,
yeah. So you just they put the kibosh on those, or didn't even express those, but you put all that attention. I'm thinking as listeners are thinking about this, they may identify clearly with your story. But I will say, we said a few minutes ago that you kind of didn't go off the rails. Your brother did a little bit, you know. But it was actually the same thing. You were really putting yourself, numbing yourself out in some ways. And these are my words, not yours. You know, self-medicating, if you will, with awards and achievements and A pluses, right?
Yes.
And so you were just lucky enough that it was socially accepted. I think of this sometimes when I see any runners listening to this, I'm not talking about you specifically, but when I see these runners who run millions of miles and they're bone thin, and I'm like, you know, we are validating you as an exerciser, but I feel, you know, you ever see somebody and go, I don't think they're running for health anymore. I think there's a you know, an addiction, if you will. And so it's like, but we like, yeah, keep going.
Oh yeah.
You know, keep going. That's awesome. When in fact, I'm not so sure underneath there's always something healthy.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think underneath any extreme achievement, I mean, sometimes it can just be someone's like, really like my dad is a 6-time Ironman triathlete.
Yeah.
He started
I talked about that running.
No, but it's like, he finds a tremendous amount of his identity in the fact that he's a triathlete and an Ironman. Mm-hmm. And the idea, like him getting hurt, is like threatening to his identity. So it's like anything that we tie that closely to our identity is very dangerous because what if that, what if that goes away? What if you know, it's like fast forward to my early 30s. What happens when you burn out and you lose your voice and you have no energy and you get mono and you can't do the work the same way?
Yeah.
You have an identity crisis because you're like, wait, that was like the place I felt confident and competent. And now that's gone. I have to like now deal with this other stuff, like my relationships and my spirituality and my emotions. Ew.
Ew. I know. Ew. I have to tell you, I've interviewed so many folks for this podcast so far. And at the time that this is playing, I don't know which ones are actually published or not, but oh my God, there's this story. There's this theme that is emerging where folks who create this persona, if you will, or tap into one part of their identity, and then something comes crashing down when all of a sudden the house of cards, which in your case looked really beautiful, came crashing down, right? So you just mentioned losing your voice, burnout, go for it. Tell Phil, pick us up there.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that you get rewarded for with gold stars and Pizza Hut book it certificates.
I love it. This memoir is writing itself. That's one chapter. Pizza Hut.
The Book It Club.
The Book It Club.
I got a lot of those. I read a lot of books. The thing that we reward kids for in school is the very thing that I think contributes to why so many people burn out as adults, because the culture of even of education is focused on, it's focused on achievement, right? It's not focused on celebrating progress. It's not focused on, I mean, it's moving this way, but historically has not been focused on emotional literacy or social skills. Right. It's been so focused on grades and SAT scores and again, all these metrics. And work can end up the same way. And what happened with me is I had been recognized, you know, I was in 2015 was named the number one health promotion professional in the United States by a group called the Wellness Council of America. And I'd been a member of this group for like, since like 2007. So for 8 years, I've been a member of this group. I'd gone to their conferences. I watched their webinars. I did all their stuff. And then the last day this application was due, I applied for this award because somebody nudged me and I was like, I mean, I work for like some 50 person company in Baltimore no one's ever heard of. Like, why would I win this award? I had some transformational things happen in my health journey. I knew we had done some really innovative things in the program that I had brought to our company and with our clients, but I was like, I don't know. So anyway, fast forward, you know, 5-6 months later, I win. There's like 230 some people in the pool and I won this award. And it was the first time I got on a national stage. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love speaking. And then that was like the beginning of the end. Because what started to happen, the pressure I put on myself was like, oh, they said you're the best. They said you're number one. Guess what, Rachel? You are going to have to keep being the best. And you're going to have all the best ideas and all the best answers. And you're going to have to know what to do. And you're going to have to not disappoint anybody. And you can never say you don't know because they just said that, like, you are the expert.
Right.
The danger of being an expert, right, is that you lose curiosity.
I would love that. The danger of what did you do?
The danger of the expert is that you lose curiosity. And humility a lot of times.
Yeah.
Because saying you don't know something implies that maybe you're not the expert, but I think that's so unfair.
It is.
Like, why is expertise, we know, right, from the exchange community, why is expertise so valued when there's like the benefits of collective wisdom and not just the value of one person knowing everything?
Right.
You know, so in any case, I lost my train of thought there of where we're going.
So you won this award.
I won this award. Thank you. Like, I went off on a rabbit trail.
Breadcrumbs.
U-turn. Giddy up, U-turn. So what started to happen was I was putting that pressure on myself. And as a result of putting the pressure on myself, I did not ask people for help. And I needed help at work. I was trying to do everything for myself. I was dropping the ball. I was letting people down. I wasn't being responsive. They were getting upset with me. They felt like clients were disappointed. And no one at any point ever came to me with genuine curiosity and care and concern, like, hey, this doesn't seem like you. How are you? Are you? Do you want to talk? Like, you want to have a conversation? Like, how can I support you? Or what help do you need? No. And this is not to blame, because I've come to learn that most people do not even know the symptoms of burnout. Like in an occupational setting, right? This sense of exhaustion or low energy, it's negativity or cynicism is the second one. The third one is increased errors. I was doing all of those things. I'd become more cynical. I was just grinding it schedule-wise. It was insane. I was, you know, consulting and speaking, and I had gotten trained in culinary nutrition and was teaching healthy cooking demos and maintaining a blog. And I was doing a lot of things. And eventually I had a dream. I had written in my journal. I can look back at these things. In capital letters, I cannot sustain this pace. Something's got to give. This was in like spring of 2015, right after I got the award. I was asked to keynote their conference, be one of the keynotes the following year, 2016. So that was my first national keynote. And I was like, oh, this is it. This is what I'm going to do at some point forever. And then that fall, September 2016, I had a dream. So this is another area of unmuting yourself, is your body. Our body tells us things and we don't pay attention.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
and then it tells you. Right.
It tells me, like, a dream of drown. For anyone listening, if you ever have a dream that you're drowning, check yourself before you wreck yourself, because
that's not even subtle, right? That's not like, you know, just a little drippy on your head. Like, if you're drowning, that's pay attention, right?
Yeah.
Did you pay attention to that dream, or did you need a bigger sign?
Well, you know, I wrote it down.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I had a dream that I was drowning.
Okay. Good. Good points.
And then, like, the scary thing was a month later, I started having trouble with my memory. So I'd like be in conversation with people and I couldn't remember words or phrases. And I was like 32 years old. And I was like, what is, you know, I go to the worst case scenario. My great grandmother had dementia. This is surely what is happening. Yes, that just spiral. And so I went to see my doctor and my integrative medicine doctor. I see all integrative medicine or functional medicine practitioners. And I remember I told him what was going on, and he said, with kindness, this was not with judgment, but he said, maybe you're doing too much.
Yeah.
How would you respond, Sherry, if someone said that to you?
I have to tell you, because I have my own burnout story, my own conversation with the doctor. So I literally had that conversation. But you know, for me, you know, I'm thinking what you might have said is, what? This, you know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know. Yeah. What did you say? I don't want to talk about me. What did you say?
I think I was kind of like, in my head, I was like, eh, that's the wrong answer. Bye. And I basically ignored him.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. I was talking to my coach this week about something else. And I was like, you know, I don't think I'm supposed to do it that way. She goes, no, you asked the question, but you just didn't like the answer. You know? I was like, okay, can I ask, if I ask it again, will you give me a different answer? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Can the answer be it's somebody else's fault besides mine?
Yeah, somebody else's fault. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you real quickly. I was doing counseling, HIV counseling, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And I was telling lots of people over and over they had HIV. I was in public health. I was in grad school. I was doing all these things. And I decided that I either had a brain tumor or a stomach ulcer. So I went to the doctor and I declared, listen, I've already diagnosed myself. It's either a brain tumor or a stomach ulcer. And he said, no, it is burnout and depression. Take these, you know, go home. And I just sobbed for 4 days, and didn't even really integrate what that meant. But it was I was told burnout, and I had no lexicon, no, if that's the right word, I had no frame of reference. I just knew that I was crying. I was tired. I was, what did you say the three things were? Cynical, increased errors.
Low energy or exhaustion is the first one. Negativity or cynicism about your work. So this is a strictly occupational burnout.
Sure.
And then the third is increased errors. Just like making mistakes, dropping
making
the ball.
Making mistakes. Yeah. So, you know, I know that all of a sudden the air got let out of my tires, you know, because I was having these physical symptoms of headaches and stomach hurting. So back to you, you're told, maybe Rachel, you're doing too much. And did you stick your finger in your ears?
La, la, la. Let me tell you how out of touch I was with reality. So about 6 weeks after I saw this doctor, mm-hmm. I lost my voice. Uh-huh. I had a really bad sore throat, which I've had before. Usually that's like my weak link, like my throat.
Gotcha.
Historically has been like growing up, I had, you know, chronic strep throat and bronchitis and laryngitis and tonsil issues and all sorts of stuff. And I'd had vocal strain before. I've had vocal nodules before, which mm-hmm. are like little kind of bumps in your vocal cords. And I lost my voice and I couldn't talk. And I was so nuts that my assistant, so by this point I had an assistant because I had mm-hmm. like spoken up enough that I was like, I need help. And this was in December of 2016. And I had a client that was having me do a cooking demo. And I mm-hmm. looked at my schedule and I was like, if I bump this out, I'm not going to be able to do it until like the last week of January. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to disappoint them. Like I find so often we're so afraid that we're going to mm-hmm. disappoint somebody else when we are like our hair's on fire.
Yeah.
And we're like, yeah, what if I let that, like your hair's on fire. Yeah. But like, what Seriously. If I let them down?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. God forbid, I have to reschedule something. So I typed up a script, Sherry. I typed up a script for my assistant and I was basically a mime mm-hmm. making these recipes and she would talk through it. And I just didn't talk for a cooking demo. Mm-hmm. And I remember leaving there. It didn't hit me until months and months and months later. Like, what? That was like to me the extreme degree of denial that I was in.
Yeah. Yeah.
That like you wrote a script for somebody else to do your job. Why didn't you just reschedule it?
Yeah.
Like you're not like closing the hole in the ozone layer. Like,
right. Or even just let her go do it.
Or just let, know? Yeah. Like they can learn how to do. And part of the problem is like I was the one certified in the nutrition piece and food safety and all of that. And so like I was the one that had to like technically do it. But like, Rachel, if they didn't learn how to make avocado chocolate mousse,
it was like there's no such thing as an avocado chocolate mousse emergency, right? But you just invented a crisis, the avocado chocolate mousse crisis.
I did.
Isn't that funny? It's how we play these mind, you know, beep, you know, what we do in our head, you know, that we begin to say, that we turn things into something way more important. And I know that for me, I started to say, this took years and years and years when I would say, you know, I'm just so tired. I can't do it. I'm like, okay, if I was puking up, if I was just like blowing groceries all over, would I go to work anyway? No. So why do I have to be bleeding or vomiting all over? It's like, there's still a level of, I shouldn't be out there doing that. I am tired enough or sick or just need a break. But when it's not obvious or something you see, mm-hmm. you keep putting other people first. Right.
You do. And then it was 2 months later that I'm back in the same doctor's office who told me I was doing too much. And this was on Valentine's Day, Sherry. I was supposed to be at dinner with my husband.
Yeah. This is about self-love, girl. That's why you went on.
Yeah. I was like, we should be at dinner. I'm like passed out. My just swollen lymph nodes. I felt exhausted. I'm in like a sweatshirt and glasses, like just desperation tears like on my face. And I sat across from him again and I told him what was going on. And he said, he's very kind. So he said this with kindness. I want to, make sure I emphasize that. Would you say this was brought on by work or that you brought this on yourself?
I was like, I like this guy.
I like him too. He's still my doctor. So for anyone listening, pause right there. Would you say that this was brought on by work? Pointing the finger at somebody else. Three fingers pointing back at you.
Yeah.
Or that you were somehow part of the reason why this thing is happening, and you just have not really been willing to turn the mirror on yourself because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Were you in tune enough to know the correct answer?
I was like, beautiful. I just started crying and I was like, good. Oh, I brought this on myself. Beautiful. 100% I want to blame my job, but sure. I said yes to all the stuff on my calendar. I had more control than I let on. And he's like, I'm going to test you for Epstein-Barr virus, which is an acute form of mono that I'd never heard of. And I got tested for it and all my numbers came up really elevated and positive. And I just, and it's contagious. Mono is contagious, right? So I was just down and out. I mean, it was one of the lowest points of my life going through. I just had no energy. I'd sleep 11, 12 hours a night for weeks and just not feel rested. I felt just so blah.
You were a wrung out dish rag. I mean, you know, it's like I'm trying to think of a metaphor of something that's just absolutely depleted. You've taken every single thing out of it. Yeah. That's what I feel it. I can't think of the right metaphor with it.
That's a good one.
But you know what I love is that, and this is something I talk about in my sort of my idea of about how do you live on purpose, is I always say the number one thing in really beginning to live on purpose is to take 100% responsibility. Because when you do, you have 100% of the power.
Yes.
Right? And so... And as long as you're blaming others, as long as we're saying, well, it's the conditions, it's work, it's, or it's even in my genetics, it's just what we do in my family, you know, or it's just my personality, or it's just, I'm just going to work this hard until we have the merger, you know, or we hire a new person or what, fill in the blank, right?
Yeah.
But when all you take it. 100% responsibility, but it didn't feel very good as you're laying in bed.
No, I had this distinct moment. I remember my niece at the time was turning two, and her birthday is the week of Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't go to her party, and I'm laying on the couch as my husband is sending me pictures from my niece's birthday. And I just had this moment of sadness, and it was, we have these turning points, like these pivot points in our lives where like something changed. I remember lying there looking at this picture thinking like, this is not how I want my life to be. Like this is... I'm the director of well-being. So there's the other kicker.
I'm so sorry. But see, this book is writing itself. I mean, it's hilarious. Can we just laugh about it for a moment? You know, I'm not laughing at, I'm hoping just that, that it's so, so hilarious. You know what I mean? But because, I'm so glad you can see the humor in that.
It's not like I was an outside salesperson. Like I was literally the director of well-being. Like I was showing everybody how to be healthy. Yeah. And in the meantime, I was like completely burned out and bottomed out.
Well, and I've talked on this podcast, I've talked to a doctor who taught about stress, who was stressed out. This happens to us, right? We end up kind of not even remembering the message of what we're doing. Because we have our own stuff, and yours was about achieving. And all of a sudden that became the way of life.
Yes. And being impressive. I was like, how impressive is somebody sitting on her couch, unable to do anything. He can't use her voice, which is her job. Like my voice was my job. And I was like, if I can't use my voice, how do I have value? And it was this, it was this, for me, this unraveling of so many things and this breakdown, like we often hear, right? You have to break down before you experience a breakthrough, which is 100% what happened for me. I mean, I was broken down emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually. It was just like sucker punch after sucker punch. And I needed every bit of that to get to the point where I was open and awake.
Get your attention.
Enough.
Yes. You know, when clients come to me as their coach and all of a sudden they're, you know, almost apologetic about what a shit show some of their life is, I'm just like, yay, I'm so excited. You know, you try not to be a little flip, but you're like, yes. Cause when it all breaks down, baby, you know what I mean? They're, you know, when the rock in your shoe is so big that you have to stop and take it out. You know what I mean? When he's like, yes, man, cause now you're gonna turn it around. Now, I don't think it takes all of us to end up in the bed with no. you know, mono. Hopefully that's why we do these podcasts, so we can turn it around before it gets crazy. But that's the way it is sometimes, right? You get the big rock in your head. We called it the other day a 2x4, you know, God, whatever your spirituality is, something will slap you upside the head.
It will.
And you got slapped upside the head.
I sure did. And the crazy thing is, during all this time, I had messages I'd get from friends. I mean, it's funny, when you get so broken down, you can also become so opened up at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, I want to write that down. Yeah.
And like, that is what I was, spiritually broken open in the midst of this experience. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly was open to receiving things from people that they probably wouldn't have even said to me prior to this happening, because of how unreceptive mm-hmm. I would have been. Like, I had a friend text me, her name's Kara, and she sent me a text message that started with the words, "Warning, unsolicited observation coming."
Oh, well, I love that about her already, that she did that. Yes.
I was like, ooh, and it was like a full screen. It was like a scroller. It was one of those messages. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like two lines. And mm-hmm. I was like, am I ready for this? Like, cause I knew, I know that she loves and cares about me, but I knew it was going to be very honest. And she wrote something to the effect of, again, knowing my background had been in well-being. I'd been in the well-being industry for, you know, at that point, 10 years when this was happening. And I would post things on my blog and on social media and all this stuff. And she said, I noticed that you post a lot on social media about not worrying so much about achievement and, you know, da, 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 but you, and like about slowing down. But if I may say so, like, you yourself don't really seem to slow down, and you don't, this was the kicker, this was like the gut punch, you don't seem content or fulfilled.
Oh, bless her. Let's love on that friend for being brave to show that to you.
I know.
But you don't feel content. You don't seem content or fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Sucker punch. Because golly, who wants to imagine living a life without that, right? Isn't that the goal?
Oh, that is the goal, to have people that in your life that love you so much that mm-hmm. they will say the thing that will just like rattle you because they know it's for your good. And they say it in a way that they know you can receive it.
Yep.
And I bet she was scared. I have to follow up with her and be like, was there any hesitancy in you about pressing mm-hmm. send on that message?
Yeah. Bless her though, man.
But seriously. And so I wrote back. I said, you know, I said, you're right. And it's something that was right in March. I got diagnosed with Epstein-Barr in February. She texted me this the second or third week of March. And I mm-hmm. said, you are 100% right. I'm working on it. Thank you for your honesty.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else could I say?
Right. And so I have to say, I don't know that she could have sent it, but you couldn't have received it. Mm-hmm. Chances are, because you had your metaphorical fingers in your ears, you know, yep. chasing. And so you had not yet been broken down to have that breakthrough. Yep. And and this is sort of my spiritual woo-woo thing. I think that all of a sudden they start lining up in the signs. And I often wonder if they're there to begin with, we just can't see them. Yep. I remember seeing Oprah years and years and years ago. I saw Oprah live like in 2000 or 2002 or whatever. And she talked about how God would throw a little pebble, it would ping on her head. And then it was a little bit bigger. And then all of a sudden it's a big freaking, you know, boulder, you know. And so we didn't see the pebble, you didn't see the little irritation, and you already even admitted to that, you know, you didn't really notice, or we didn't really pay attention to, because you had these chronic throat infections.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Chronic. And so little signs. So I like to think the goddess or whatever's like,
literally clearing my throat.
Clearing your throat. And like, if that's not going to work, sit down, because I'm getting ready to whop you upside the head with a 2x4. So I want to know how, because this is the part, I mean, I love all the story, but when I learned about, you know, obviously the listeners are going, we kind of see the unmuted part mm-hmm. of what you're doing now. Connect those dots for us.
Yeah. So for me, it's like, I feel like I had to be muted. Mm-hmm. Like, not use the thing that was my crutch, which was my voice.
Mm-hmm.
So that the voices around me could be unmuted and speak truth into me.
Mm.
And I had to, in that situation, unmute myself and ask for help in a way that I had not before, and been vulnerable with people in a way that I had not been before. and admit when I couldn't handle something in a way that I had never been willing to do that before. And so it was this bottoming out that caused me to unmute. I was like, geez, whatever the heck I'm doing isn't working. I guess I just need to figure out how to just acknowledge the things I'm struggling with and not worry about whether or not people are going to judge me for it, because it is what it is. And what I can't sustain that pace and cadence of life anymore. Mm-hmm. And I started taking what I was learning about building relationships and being in community and being consistent with people and I started seeing a therapist for the first time. We were going through a lot, even at like church, we were going through this like spiritual gifts, like series with one of our pastors. And they had this thing at the very end of it. It's called an impartation, where like these people come and they like lay their hands on you and they speak over like whatever your spiritual gift is. People listening may or may not think it's woo-woo, but this was my experience, so I like to share it. Please. And I'd never met these guys in my life. Okay. And I was super skeptical. I was like, I don't know about all this. Like, we'll see. And so they walk around and the first guy comes and lays his hands on me and he like on my hands, I think it was. And they speak over the gift. And he said the gift of healing. And here I am like sick as a dog. Like, this is when I'm recovering from mono, by the way. And I'm like, I see the irony in this. the gift of healing. And he said, and not just physical healing, but your words have power. I've never met this man in my entire life.
Your words have power.
And I was just like, I started to just cry. And then I was like, okay, maybe that was like a fluke. Maybe somebody had a conversation. I don't know. Yeah. I know they did not have conversations, but then the second guy comes around and he holds my hands up and he goes, again, this is like it's a Christian church. He goes, I've never shared this in a podcast, but we're going there today. We're going to share. He goes, Holy Spirit, send fire to these healing hands. And I was like, did you talk to? I asked like 10 people afterwards. I was like, was your gift healing?
Because you can't just, yeah. Don't we do that? Right. It's like, what? Yeah. Like,
you were trying really? And it's like, no, Rachel. And I believe that is what my gifting is on in this earth, is to use my voice, singing, written, spoken word, to bring about transformation, awakening, and healing in people. Like,
no question.
And thank you for affirming that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's so cool how this happens. So that was another unmuting of like, let people speak into and over you.
Yeah. So I want to go back to that really quickly. This part, I just absolutely love. I found my notes that I was looking for. That's good. that listen to this. You had, you know, you've heard that phrase. We have two ears and one mouth.
Yeah.
You know, but all of a sudden you had to have your mouth be quiet so that you could really hear. So you were that's necessarily, that's something we could all really benefit from. Is there places where we need to just be quiet and really listen to the messages, listen to what's being said to us, listen to our friends who are maybe holding up those little signs? And whether they were saying it or not, before that, you had to actually literally be muted to hear it. And then I love this part. Then as you were unmuted, you were unmuted, but you came out of that speaking and interacting in a new way.
Yes.
You were asking for help when Rachel didn't ask for help before. Mm-mm. Rachel didn't ask to be seen. Rachel wasn't expressed in that same way. You came out of that experience.
Yeah.
So when you did turn the volume back on, you were like, I'm doing it in a different way.
And I'm going to talk about what this is really about. I'm going to talk about burnout is this state of disconnection from ourselves and from our sense of purpose, talking about living with purpose. Burnout is a disconnection from our values. Burnout is a disconnection from people in our lives. And I was like, I'm going to talk about this for what it is. And I'm going to be honest. And I put the text message from my friend on the screen in a slide in a room, the first session that I did in July of 2017 about beating burnout. I put the text on the screen. I was like,
so you're a brave little toaster. Yeah, you're a brave little toaster. I just have to say. I mean, you know, because and I want to say this to the listeners here that Rachel has been chosen or has chosen to do this work in a real public way, that's just your particular path. Yeah. We don't have to take stages.
No.
And speak, you know, our transformation in the way that you have.
Right.
It can be something that's very private or small. It doesn't mean it's any less muted. I just want to speak to that. But yours is, you have been called to, in my way of thinking, to do it on a bigger platform.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that though, too, because some people think like unmuting yourself means being loud, that it means being brazen. No, I just believe it means looking at the areas of your life where you are silencing yourself, whether it's in your body, whether it's in your emotions, whether it's spiritually, whether it's with creative expression, at work, in relationships, to just be honest with yourself and think about, where am I muting myself? Where am I silencing myself? Where am I holding back? And what's like one of those areas that I feel most confident I could make even a little change in to gradually unmute myself? It's a process. It's not like I'm unmuted and now I'm never insecure and I never hold back. And it's like, no, I'm just more aware when I do.
Yeah. I wrote a little note here that this didn't happen overnight. So as I tied in like what I do with clients and talking about designing your life on purpose, often almost 100% of the time, folks have just been operating on default, following the script they were given, or that society gave them, or that they even at one time wanted.
Yes.
And they're not fully unmuting even to themselves to go, you know what, I really don't want this, or there's this thing I want and that I keep pushing away. And so that sense of really asking yourself that powerful question, what is not being expressed in me? What is itching to be expressed? What is itching to be experienced? Mm-hmm. And those aren't necessarily luxuries or for special people or for later. No, it's right now.
Yes.
I used to say, you know, there's the phrase, life is just too short. Mm-hmm. You need to go do it. And there's truth to that. But there's also, life can be really long. And what if you're miserable?
Yeah.
Because you're not, you know, it's like, I mean, I kind of say that to be funny, but there's a truth to it. Imagine living this really long life, not having the things you wanted. What if Rachel, pre-muted, was still, that's not a very fun life. Lots of awards, maybe.
But it's such an empty, it's like what I feel like the depth I have right now, and like the friends that I think I just had this wall up because I'd been so hurt when I was a little girl of just not really feeling a part of community socially. I never really felt, I didn't really let people get to know me as part of it. So part of it is I got to own that. I did not let people get to know me because I was so afraid of being known. And as an adult, I just now I'm the friend that, like, for my closest friends, you know, when someone's having a challenge and they like don't know who to talk to about it, or they're afraid someone else would judge them for it, they'll like come and talk to me about it because they've seen me be honest and real about my stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay.
And so when you have those breakdowns, all of a sudden you realize you can survive them, first of all. You know what I mean? And you develop this muscle for going into those shadow sides, which are not bad sides. They're just the other side of the sun. And the, you know what I mean? It's not the bad. It's just the other side of it. Yeah. And when you develop that muscle and capacity, people are starving for that, Rachel. People are starving for a safe place to talk about things that are hard.
They are. Oh, so say that again.
So people beautiful. Are starving for a place, for a safe place to talk about what's hard. Yeah. And I think there's a fear that they think they're going to drop anchor in that, or they're going to open up Pandora's box and not be able to put everything back in there. That's not what happens.
No,
it really doesn't. No. I want to say that to any listener, is that your fear is valid, but it's a myth. It is. We'll call it an urban legend. No, it's a myth that really, when you turn around, if you're trying to outchase the shadow that's following you and you just keep chasing it, if you turn around and actually just go headlong into that deep cloud, on the other side is the sun.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to turn around and look at it. It's counterintuitive, right?
But it's true. And it gives us courage. You know, what I discovered that was unexpected for me, it was like, gosh, the braver I am, the easier it is to be brave.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you lift 10 pounds, it, you know, 12's not that hard.
No.
And then 13, you know, and then 15. And so think about that braveness then. When you become brave, then that doesn't mean you don't have fear. It just means you've got, oh, I've got the resources to do that thing. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it is scary to claim that you want something different than what currently exists. Mm-hmm. Right? Don't you think? I mean, there's all kinds of reasons to stay right where you are, you know, even if it's quote painful, it's still the devil, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
The familiar discomfort is more preferable to the unfamiliar discomfort.
Beautifully said. Yeah. And so we stay there until we get whopped upside the head.
Yeah. Like, hey, you know,
if we're lucky.
Need your attention.
So what was the two words your friend was so lovingly said? You are not fulfilled and
or content. I was not content or fulfilled. And I was like, oh, snap, you're right.
So thinking about living a life on purpose and this idea of being fulfilled and content, do those words describe you now?
I'd say that I'm a fulfilled person. I'd say I'm sometimes content. I have a natural just catalytic energy in me that is always looking for, like, looking toward the future and, like, what's next.
Yeah.
But I think we can, so I'll give you a longer answer to that question. I experienced contentment in a profound way recently.
Okay.
That really got my attention because it felt so unfamiliar. One, leaving my job and being able to be my own boss and do things the way that I want to and work with the clients I want to and do that how I want to gave me a tremendous amount of, I'd say, fulfillment. And the work that I do, I see the impact that it has and how people are transformed and how they have hope and they feel seen and they feel understood and they feel validated. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I'm very fulfilled by the work that I do. And I feel like I'm more fulfilled in my relationships than I've ever been because I've done a lot of the work.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say definitely more fulfilled. The contentment piece came in recently when my husband and I celebrated our 10th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. And we had just come back from 16 days of vacation, which I have never taken a 16-day vacation in my entire life, like ever.
Yeah.
And we took 2 weeks off, you know, because I was like, we need it. Like, we just last year, right? I know, you know, about getting hit by a truck and fractured my back in the midst of COVID and recovering from that was just brutal. It was a lot in addition to running a business, the first year of running a business in the midst of a global pandemic. Right. that was 100% live speaking, right? Until the pandemic hit, and then it was 100% virtual. But like, just going through all of that was really hard. And so taking this time away and having that extended time of our vacation is always a combination of spontaneous exploration and highly anticipated plans. So like, we know where we're going to stay. Like, we knew we were staying at Hotel Vermont in Burlington and it looked really nice. And we were going to have this jacuzzi tub and we knew certain restaurants we were going to go to, but otherwise we're just like, it's Saturday. We have dinner at 5:30 tonight. What do we feel like doing today? Right. And it's just like an adventure. And just being able to have the freedom of that space and have 2 weeks where I wasn't performing, where I wasn't having to impress anybody, where I was like just off. I wasn't on. And I came back from that. And then like 6 days later, we had a vow renewal ceremony with like an intimate group of family and friends. And I got my hair and makeup done and got a new dress and he was in a suit. And we wrote our own vows, which we had not done for our wedding. And the same pastor who married us is a friend of ours and he did the ceremony. And I came away from that and I woke up the next morning just feeling so content.
Beautiful.
In the sense of like, I was just reminded like this thing that you have, Rachel, this man who loves you and he was willing to put himself in a, if I had said, hey, do you want to write your own vows? And he could like literally just choose his actual response. He probably would have said, no, can we just do what Ryan tells us to do? But like, he did it for me. Like, you know, he did it for me. He did it for us. And he added wit in there, which I get to see. Not everyone gets to see his wit. And he just was himself. And it was so beautiful. And we just felt so supported and known and seen by these people who have been with both of us through so many ups and downs. Kara was there, the text message friend. She was there, like, people that have been there from before we got together, people that have been there from the literally the entire span of our 15-year relationship were there, and they were witnessing that and they were supporting us in that. And I just had this feeling of like, this is what life is about.
Yeah. Yeah. I got chill bumps. Yeah. Yeah.
It was so clear. And then the crazy thing, we had a photographer take pictures of us, and there was this picture that he took, and he goes, "Oh, check this out." We're walking through this like garden, holding hands, mm-hmm. looking at each other. And in the upper left corner of the picture, a butterfly had flown into the frame.
Mm.
And I have what I'm looking at. I have like butterfly art and stuff in my office, and you know, without change, there would be no butterflies, and with brave right. wings, she flies, and just butterfly stuff in my house and peacocks. Yeah. And it's a symbol. And to me, it's like the butterfly is the ultimate symbol of transformation.
Absolutely.
And literal breakthrough. And to have that happen at that 10-year milestone of like, so we have both grown so much.
Yeah.
And we have both done so much work.
Mm-hmm.
And we've shared so much pain, and we've shared so much joy, and we are in community
mm-hmm.
with dozens of people that are just rooting for us mm-hmm. and that love us and that mm-hmm. believe in us. And I felt like the weight of that love
mm-hmm.
just like saturate me in that experience. And it was like I had like a love hangover the next day.
That's a hangover we'd love to have, right? A love hangover. You don't take any tomato juice for that one, right? No. I adore this story. And you couldn't have written a fictional rendition of what it means to kind of come through on the other side, but that was your truth right there. Do you know what I mean? This,
yes,
the beauty of that, the 10-year mark, and that ability for you to feel contentment. I flashed to Anne Lamott talks about how she feels the presence of God. It's just sometimes in 8-second increments. Mm-hmm. And I just had this belief, you know, this idea that we don't necessarily have to live in a place of contentment because we are achievers and we're doing these things. But if we're open and we allow that to come in, that light and that, you know, go, I am at the base of me. My foundation is solid and I'm content. Yeah. Because I believe you're probably content way more than you think. You just had an opportunity to really connect the dots in that moment. Mm-hmm. That would be my yeah. I'm curious about that. I'll just say I'm curious. I want, can you sing something?
Oh, yeah. You want to hear a little bit? So how this got into things? This is part of my
unmuting. I do want to know this story. Yes. Let's hear this part about the singing and then I want you to sing something for us.
So it started in college. I had come back from a semester abroad. I was in gospel choir, which I was in it because you didn't have to try out. So no one ever actually heard me sing by myself. Because
you were lip syncing probably.
Because I was probably lip syncing. I'm like, there's 80 people. I'm going to blend in. Like, it's fine. Like, you know, I'm like, hey. Mm-hmm. And so I went to... we were doing tryouts for the spring concert, and I waited till everybody left except for like the people that had to be there, like the director and the assistant director. And I told him I wanted to try out for the solo. And so he sent me to the microphone and I sang this song. It's called "This When I Rose This Morning." And the lyric is, "This morning when I rose, I didn't have no doubt."
Mm-hmm.
is the lyric. And so do you want me to just say, okay, hold on, since we're talking about it. Okay.
Yeah.
I can do that. It's not going to be a familiar song to people unless they're like,
no, doesn't matter. Music, but the one you're being led to sing.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what.
Straw test is really good for clearing your voice, by the way.
Ah.
So here we go. So this is, okay. I'll say this is lyrics. So this is what I did. I went to the microphone and I stood in this empty church and I closed my eyes and I just like let it go. And this is essentially what I did. Mm-hmm. This morning when I rose, I didn't have no doubt. This morning when I rose, I didn't have no doubt. This morning when I rose, I didn't have no doubt. I know the Lord will take care of me, will provide for me, lead and guide me all the way, yeah, all the way.
Oh. You guys, oh my God. Rachel, just did you just like, I mean, mic drop? Did you blow your own mind?
You know, I was terrified. Oh my God. I was shaking. Like every joint of me was like shaking. I was so nervous, but the desire to be expressed, yes, was greater than the fear of being heard.
Oh, got to write that one down. The desire to be expressed was greater than the
fear of being heard.
Fear of being heard. Y'all hear, listen, take that in. The pain of squelching yourself became more unbearable than the pain of the possibility of looking foolish or falling on your face.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'll tell you what, the crazy thing that happened was like, I did that and then I finished and then I just kind of like looked at him. I didn't think I had a chance. His name's Eric Bird. He's a jazz musician. He had been playing at the piano, you know, the keys. Uh-huh. He gets up from the piano. He knocks over a music stand and he goes, "Where did that come from?" And I was like, it just needed to come out. And so that was the beginning. I had a solo every semester after for that concert. Mm-hmm. Music is how my husband and I connected. Mm-hmm. We would go to the chapel and he had this yellow, tattered yellow folder of music with all these printed out song lyrics in it. And he would play and I would sing and we'd stay there until campus safety kicked us out at 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And he asked me to come sing at his church with him. And then we were both part of a church where he is also musical, obviously. And we were on the music team, and one of my best friends asked me to sing at her wedding like 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then most recently I went through a professional speaking training with a group called Heroic Public Speaking back in 2018. And I was telling the story as part of my speech about getting unmuted. And I wrote to my writing coach, Sherry, I wrote, so when I talk about the story of when I sang at gospel choir, should I like, would it be weird if I sang that part? And she was like, is this a rhetorical question?
Like, I was like, it'd probably be weird if you didn't.
Like, yeah, you should sing.
Yeah.
And so that was the first time.
Yeah.
2019 was the first time that I connected, mm-hmm, singing and speaking.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, maybe these two things should be friends. And now in every keynote, I sing something. I started working with a vocal coach in February. Mm-hmm. And every Monday, it is like the highlight of 3 o'clock on my Monday. We get together, we do, you know, all kinds of songs, you know, like, and she's like, you don't always have to think about what you want to sing like on the stage for work. Like, what other songs would you want to work on? Like, Make Me Feel Your Love by Adele. Like that one.
Yeah. Love. Oh, wow. Okay. Mm. Right, we have to sing that one off camera.
Okay. Yeah. I'll share that when I do. I want to record some stuff. I have some friends that are musicians that like, yes, you know, have studios, and I'm like, I want to like record. I want to lay down some tracks and record some stuff. Aside from just like the little snippets of things I post on LinkedIn or like,
yeah,
you know, sing in the talks that I give. But for me, it was like, this is the ultimate. And then when I rolled out my business in 2019, I was like, I am unmuted. This is what I stand for. I'm going to use my voice. I'm going to, mm-hmm, boldly express myself. I'm going to sing. I'm going to speak. I'm going to invite other people into spaces where they feel confident unmuting themselves and asking for help, yes, and sharing their joy and sharing their pain and asking for what they need and listening to their bodies and asking for opportunities at work. Like, I'm going to be someone who stands for unlocking all of these things in people and the way they've been unlocked in me.
Absolutely. And Rachel, I have to tell you, when I met you, before I knew all that about you, I knew all that about you. Mm. It radiates out of you. It radiates out of you in your work. I mean, you are, from my perspective, one of the most aligned people I've ever met. Mm-hmm. I think your message, of course, has come out of your mess, which are the most beautiful messages. They're the ones that really ping us and we listen to. And I'm just sending out so much love to anyone who might be listening to this at any point. that if you're getting pinged, pay attention to that, that she, Rachel's been telling her story of literally unmuting her voice, but where are we not fully expressing ourselves? Where are we holding back for some other rules by that, by our own definition or by society's definition or by, oh, it's too late, I'm too whatever. Mm-hmm. We're going to throw the bullshit flag on that, right? And it's like, it's, you know, we're going to throw the flag on the play that if you're still being pinged to do that thing, it ain't too late. If you're still breathing, if you're still on this side of the Mother Earth, it is not too late. It is not too late. Rachel, I cannot, well, first of all, I have a few last little bit of a questions, but I just have to tell you, this has been the most generative, generous, inspiring conversation I've had in a long time. I personally am touched to the core.
Oh, you made
story.
It possible. You create the space for it.
Well, so. I'm honored that you joined me with here. So I have a couple of questions that I'm asking all my guests, or a few. So, when you find yourself not really in alignment, and I have a feeling I know one of the answers, let me ask it another way. What do you do to keep yourself centered? What do you do? What are some of your practices that keep you in this sense of alignment? I know journaling is one.
Journaling. I love journaling. Uh-huh. One is just being in conversation with friends that know me really well, that I can just be like, all right, here's what's really going on.
Okay, good.
My husband.
You have a tribe.
I have a tribe. My husband is very centered and grounded naturally, and he can sense very quickly if I'm off. And if I go to him and say, like, he's just very direct, like he's very direct, but in a very just kind of simplified way. And so if I'm noticing I'm off in some way, my husband and my dad, actually,
they are like,
my dad will call me out. And my husband, if I approach him and say, hey, I'm noticing this, he'll be like, well, what if you just thought about doing this? Or what if, maybe this is the case. Maybe this is the scenario.
Beautiful.
So he helps ground me. Music just like, just brings me back. I'd say like my faith, like sometimes just like watching a sermon on a Sunday that is the message I needed to hear that day. Sure. It's like that grounds and centers me. It's ritualistic. Beautiful. It happens every week. And just sometimes those words of validation and a devotional might do it. You know, so I wouldn't say I'm like an expert at centering and grounding myself. I think people that know me really well would be like, Rachel, centered and grounded? Centered in who I am and what I'm after, but not always centered in my spirit. But I do feel like I have a calm excitement. Like I have this space where I can be in the place of
There's this vision sometimes that we think we're supposed to be the Dalai Lama or supposed to be this, you know, with their legs crossed. And no. You know, this may be as good as it gets in this lifetime is that you can, every now and then calm down. Right. but it sounds like you have these things in place and they're very intentional. And I hear the gratitude also that you have.
And sleep. I don't, since burning out, one of the biggest change I made after my burnout was like, I just don't mess with my sleep. There's like,
gosh. You're like the third person who said that to me, and you're talking to a person who is a sucky, sucky sleeper. So I'm just like, oh, maybe I'm getting a message.
Get one of these. I have a Whoop band, WHOOP. It tracks all your stuff. I've had it for like 3 years.
Yeah.
I'll send you a link about it.
I don't want to see how bad it is.
It's so motivating.
Okay. The achiever just came out and you. She's like, oh, get this one.
It's my external gauge when I'm ignoring myself. It's gotcha. Like, oh, by the way, pay attention. Ding, ding, ding. So
beautiful, anyway. Beautiful. I have a feeling I would know what your motto would be if you were on a bumper sticker. What would your motto be?
My motto would be, gosh, I have so many things that I believe in. One of them would be that, joyfully alive, boldly expressed.
Oh, joyfully alive, boldly expressed. I love that. And what have I not asked you that you want to share? Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to share?
I would just say for anyone listening that feels like that has felt like you said pinged today, be gentle with yourself. Like sometimes, like as we're sharing in these stories, like sometimes we have these extreme examples of something that happens that just hits us upside the head. And if you are somebody who is an achiever, you're probably also somebody who's kind of hard on yourself. So I would just say like, be a bit gentle, give yourself a bit of grace. Like sometimes we don't realize these things. And so as you start to awaken to yourself, be kind to yourself in that process, because the temptation can be to jump all over yourself and then get on yourself for more, which is not motivating. And I still do this, by the way, sometimes. I'm not going to be like, I just totally got it figured out. No, like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? I'm hard on myself. I sometimes beat myself up. I get in my head too much. Like, I still do that, those things. I just have tools for how to like not stay there.
Right.
So I would say like to just really offer yourself some grace and kindness and compassion, and to walk away from this experience today thinking to yourself, what is one thing that at some point in my journey has brought me joy, and how could I incorporate even a small element of that into the next 24 hours of my life?
Beautiful. I love that. Something small, measurable, and joy focused.
Yes.
You know, not the ridicule. And it's always worth saying over and over and over again, self-compassion. And particularly if you are an achiever, anyone who's like I would say overachiever, but really identifies as an achiever, you've built a big muscle of being critical, right?
Yes.
Love and compassion. So last question, if given a choice, is it dark or milk chocolate?
100% dark.
All right, girlfriend, we can stay friends.
I got a bar in my fridge right now. It's a dark chocolate hazelnut toffee crunch.
Oh, shut up. That's awesome. You know, I may work on taking sugar out of my diet, all those things I'm supposed to do, but there is one bite of dark chocolate before I go to bed every night, because that just is. You know what I mean? It's like, yes. It just is. It just
I support is. That.
You support that. Thank you. Well, we didn't talk specifically about your work with companies and organizations. This woman is phenomenal in her work on a really large scale, big scope. I want to put, there's going to be all those kind of connections in the show notes, but I am so honored and pleased that you've let us get to know you as a person. And I know anyone who listens is not doubting the phenomenal impact you're having in the world on everybody who you connect with. So I'm encourage you to connect with her, follow her on LinkedIn and other places where she sings and motivates us. And Rachel, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Sherry. This was great.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast, and I sure hope that you're taking away something that you can begin to use today. Speaking of things you can use, I have lots of free things over at sherryhoneycutt.com, and the one I want to highlight at today's podcast is something I call Work Your Butt Off, and I spell it B-U-T. Let's get those butts worked off, and is a 30-day program to help you get your butts off the couch. It's 30 videos, it's a 75-page workbook, I think, and it's free to help you begin to take deliberate action toward getting that thing or those things done. So that's what I've got for you. I would love to invite you over to sherryhoneycutt.com. Click under cool stuff and you'll find that. You'll also find the link in the show notes and in the description of this podcast. Y'all, I'm here to help you take action, because action is how we begin to get new thoughts around our life. So go check it out. Get your free copy of this course that I've designed, and go and design your best life. Until next time.